The following is a free-for-download audiobook available on KrishnaPath.org. The Laws of Nature and Infallible Justice by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Introduction. Man prides himself on being a creature of reason above the lowly beasts. Yet it seems that when he applies his reason to unlocking the secrets of nature for his benefit, he seeks deeper and deeper into a quagmire of intractable problems. The internal combustion engine gets us where we're going faster, but also results in choking air pollution, the greenhouse effect, and a dangerous dependence on oil. Harnessing the atom gives us cheap energy, but also leads to weapons of mass destruction, Chernobyl, and a rising tide of dangerous radioactive waste. Modern agribusiness produces a dizzying variety of abundance of food in the supermarket, but also results in the death of the family farm, the pollution of groundwater, the loss of precious topsoil, and many other problems. It's clear we're missing something in our attempts to harness the laws of nature for our own purposes. What is that, quote, something, end quote? We find out in the very first mantra of the Ishopanishad, the foremost of ancient India's books of wisdom, known as the Upanishads. Quote, "Everything in this creation is owned and controlled by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong." End quote. In nature, we see this principle at work. Nature's arrangement, set up by the Lord, maintains the birds and beasts. The elephant eats his 50 kilos per day, and the ant his few grains. If man doesn't interfere, the natural balance sustains all creatures. Any agriculturalist will tell you the earth can produce enough food to feed 10 times the present human population. Yet political intrigues and war, unfair distribution of land, the production of cash crops like tobacco, tea, and coffee instead of food, and erosion due to misuse ensure that millions go hungry, even in wealthy countries like the United States. We must understand the laws of nature from the viewpoint of the Supreme Lord, who has created these laws. In his eyes, all the earth's inhabitants, whether creatures of the land, water, or air, are his sons and daughters. Yet we, the human inhabitants, the, quote, most advanced, end quote, of his creatures, treat these sons and daughters with great cruelty, from the practice of animal slaughter to destruction of the rainforests. Is it any wonder that we suffer an unending series of natural disasters, wars, epidemics, famines, and the like? The source of our problem is a desire for sense gratification beyond the consideration of anyone else's rights. These rights are the rights of the child in relation to the father. Every child has the right to share the wealth of his father. So creating a brotherhood of all creatures on earth depends on understanding the universal fatherhood of God. As we have seen, the Vedic literature declares that the Supreme Lord owns and controls the entire creation. Not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. He is the complete whole. Then, what is our position? Just as a king is no king without subjects, God is no God without his servants. He is the supreme enjoyer, and we are meant to take part in his enjoyment through service to him, not by trying to enjoy separately. He is omnipotent and thus completely independent. Our minute independence is a tiny reflection of his total independence. It is our misuse of that minute independence and our attempt to enjoy separate from him that have resulted in our current predicament. Why do we misuse our independence? Because we are ignorant of our real nature. The first lesson of the Vedic wisdom is that we are not bodies, but rather spirit souls, minute particles of consciousness dwelling within the body and animating it. Just as a car is a machine that allows a driver to go travel from point A to point B, the body is a machine that allows the spirit soul to act and to experience sensations and thoughts within the Lord's material nature. When we understand our true identity as spiritual beings, part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, God, we understand that we are meant to serve Him just as the hand and foot serves the whole body. Our problem, however, is that we forget our identity separate from the body and instead misidentify ourselves with it. If a person happens to be born in America, he considers himself an American. If he's born in France, he considers himself a Frenchman, and so on. We also identify ourselves according to our sex, race, creed, social status, etc. But all these qualities apply only to the body, not the soul. Therefore, embracing them as our true identity causes us to forget the Lord and our relationship with Him, and to see ourselves as independent enjoyers of His material nature. The Vedic literature explains that human activity, when devoid of service to the Lord, is governed by the subtle law known as the law of karma. This is the familiar law of action and reaction as it pertains to what we do in this world and the enjoyment or suffering we experience as a result. If I cause pain to another living being, then as surely as the wheel of life turns, I will be forced to suffer similar pain. And if I bring happiness to another, a like pleasure awaits me. At every second, with every breath, our activities in this material world cause enjoyment and suffering. To facilitate these endless actions and reactions, there has to be more than just one life. There has to be reincarnation. Until recently, the idea of reincarnation, while universally accepted in India and other Eastern countries, had found few adherents in the West. The Church banned the philosophy of reincarnation centuries ago. This is a long story dating as far back as the history of the early Christian Church between 300 AD and 600 AD. Recounting this controversy is not within the scope of this book, but the denial of this important concept has left a void in the world view of the Western peoples. However, over the last decade or so, thinkers in the West have begun to take the idea of reincarnation seriously. For example, Dr. Michael Sabom of Emory University Medical School has written a book entitled Recollections of Death, A Medical Investigation, 1982, which details his studies confirming out-of-the-body experiences reported by cardiac arrest patients. Sabom writes, quote, "Could the mind which spirit splits apart from the body or from the physical brain be, in essence, the soul, which continues to exist after the final bodily death, according to some religious doctrines?" End quote. And Dr. Ian Stevenson, a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia, in his book, 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, 1966, has documented and verified past life memories in young children. Other studies using such methods of hypnotic regression indicate that the idea of reincarnation may soon gain acceptance among mainstream scientists in the West. The Vedic literature makes reincarnation of the soul a central feature in its explanation of human destiny. And the logic is obvious when we consider a simple question like the following. Why is one child born to wealthy parents in the United States while another is born to starving parents in Ethiopia? Only the doctrine of karma and reincarnation, reward and punishment carried over many lifetimes, answers this question easily. The laws of nature and infallible justice has been compiled primarily from two sources. The first is a series of talks given on the Sri Ishupanishad by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, see the author, page 64. Delivered in Los Angeles during the spring of 1970. These talks provide an illuminating account of how the universe really operates. The second source is Srila Prabhupada's commentated translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. From the third canto of this monumental work, we here reproduce chapter 30, entitled, quote, description by Lord Kapila of adverse fruit of activities, end quote. In this section, we learn the fate of the sinful soul who transgresses the laws of God's nature and incurs punishment according to the law of karma. In one of his Ishupanishad talks, Srila Prabhupada says, quote, if you do good work, you will have so-called enjoyment in your next life, but you will remain bound up in the cycle of birth and death. And if you do bad work, then you will have to suffer the sinful reactions and also remain bound up in birth and death. But if you work for Krishna, there are no such reactions, good or bad, and at the time of death, you will return to Krishna. This is the only way to break the bonds of karma, end quote. And this is the only way for society as a whole to mitigate the sufferings mentioned earlier. While we are in this world, there is no getting rid of suffering altogether, for, as the Vedic teachings recognize, this material world is a place of suffering. Ultimately, we are powerless in the midst of a vast array of natural forces. The hope, therefore, is to know and follow the will of the Supreme Lord, the Master of Nature. Only in this way can we transcend the laws of nature and end the cycle of reincarnation and attain the perfection of life, love of God, and a place in His kingdom.